So you remember that we're trying to understand the Rashi at the beginning of Sanhedrin, and Rashi identifies Gzelos as a kofer b'pikadon mishashalach b'yad. So he has these two elements here. Number one, he was kofer b'pikadon, and number two, he was shalach b'yad. So let's take a look at the Gemara at the beginning of Bava Kamma. And we're going to combine, the Gemara on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, specifically the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph with the Rashi, together with the Gemara on Daf Dalet Amud Beis. And our subject for today is to define Gzelos, right? The Mishnah says the Gzelos Bishlosha. So what is included on the Gzelos?
So what Daf wrote, sorry?
Well, just the first Mishnah in Bava Kamma is going to help us understand what Gzelos are. So the Mishnah has Shor, Bar, Maver, and Hever. And the Gemara later on is going to discuss what Maver is. And according to one opinion, Maver is Odom HaMazik. Now Rashi says on the third line from the top, Kisedush and Ksuvim Beparsha Sidram Bimishnah. Rashi says that if you want to understand the order, the sequence in which the Mishnah mentions Shor, Bar, Maven, Hever, then open up the Chumash to Parshas Mishpatim and you will see the Seder HaParshios. So for example, the first Parsha in the list in Mishpatim is Shor. Then the Torah goes on to Bar. Afterwards, the Torah gets to Esh. Now, that only covers 3 out of 4. What we're left with is Mave. So, where is Mave in the parasha? So if you'll take a look at Tosvis, Dibra Maskel Hashor, if you'll fast forward about 5 lines, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 lines down in that Tosvis, you see where the line starts, Ulaman Diomar? Ulaman Diomar, Mave Ze Odom, Afal Gav.
I thought that sounded good.
Yeah. Afal gav dilim basar havara ksiv. Now watch what happens over here. Mave in the Mishnah is a reference to Adam. But Adam doesn't appear in Parshas Mishpatim. In fact, Adam appears in Parshas Emor. So if Mavet means Adam, why is it wedged between Bar and Hever? When in fact Mavet is Adam, is not in Parshas Mishpatim at all. It's in Parshas Emor. And Rashi maintains that the sequence in the Mishnah of Shor, Bar, Mavet, Hever is the sequence of the Torah. Well, that's true for Shor, Bar, and Hever. Hever means Esh. But it's not true for the case of Mave. Mave is Adam. So Rabbeinu Tam, at the end of this Tosvis, Rabbeinu Tam pierced the last 4 lines in Tosvis, Dishem Adam Ksiv Beparsha Kodem, that you will find Adam in the Parsha. He calls it Shem Adam, meaning something more general. We're not talking about Adam HaMazik, per se. But it says, Ki Yignov Ishar. So we have the following. In the sequence of the parasha, and yesterday we saw it inside the Chumash, I don't have a Chumash here, but you'll have to trust me on this. It goes from Shar to Bar, and then it has Ganov, and then it has Esh. So the Mave, which is wedged in between Bar and Hever, says Rabbeinu Tam, is a reference to Ganov. So we see clearly that Rabbeinu Tam is operating with the following equation, which again, if you write it down, it'll be easier. If you're a genius, you'll memorize it. Rabbeinu Tam is operating with an equation between Odom HaMazik and Ganav. The case of Odom HaMazik literally is in Parshas Emor, and it doesn't belong in Parshas Mishpatim. That's called Makeh Behemah Yishalmena. If, let's say, Reuven destroys Shimon's animal, he has to pay for that. The case of Shema Adam, which is written in the Parsha in Mishpatim, is the case of Ganav. But Rabbeinu Tam is postulating an equation between Ganav and Mazik. Now let's try to analyze what is similar between the case of Ganav and Mazik. Exactly. The concept I want to mention here is Hefsed. Hefsed means they cause you a loss of money. So Reuven could cause Shimon a loss of money in one of two ways, either by stealing his possessions or by destroying his possessions. And Rabbeinu Tam says that for our purpose, in terms of structuring the Mishnah, those are interchangeable. So the Mishnah is able to use Mave as the Shem Adam. It's a general kind of a case where Reuven causes a loss to Shimon. He didn't actually destroy Shimon's property, but he absconded with Shimon's property, hence causing him a loss. So that's what Rabbeinu Tam says, Shem Adam Ksiv B'Parsha. Before the Torah mentions Eish, it mentions Ganav, Ki Yignov Ish Shariyehu. And Ganav is like a Mazik. So even though Mazik per se, in the strict sense, only appears much later in Sefer Vayikra, it doesn't appear in Sefer Shmos at all. And there in Vayikra in Parshas Zemer, it says, Maka Behem Yishalmena, when he destroys his friend's property. But nevertheless, in the Parsha Mishpatim, the Torah has wedged the case of Ganav between Bar and Eish. You'll have to trust me on this because I don't have a Chumash, but I'll show it to you inside. And Mave, therefore, Shem Adam. Again, it's not exactly the case of destroying someone's property. That property might still be in existence. But by stealing his property, you cause him a loss. And that's called Mazik. So that even though the Parsha of the Arba Ovos Nezikin in Mishpatim is the Parsha of Mazik, which means the destruction, let's say if my shor destroys your tomatoes, or my bar destroys your shor because your shor falls to the bottom of my bar, or I light a fire in the case of Hever and it burns down your haystack. But nevertheless, Mava fits in because the Torah places Ganav in between bar and Hever. And what's the case of a Ganav? Also a destruction of someone's object. Not literally, it's not a physical destruction of his property, but conceptually you've taken away his property. And taking away his property is considered Shem Adam. It's like an Adam HaMazik situation. Because what difference does it make whether I destroy your possession or I abscond with it? I make it impossible for you to have access to it. In both cases, you suffer the loss of that moment, of that object. Now what I want to do now is fast forward to Daf Dalid Amud Beis. Now on Daf Dalid Amud Beis, if you drop down about 10 lines from the top, a little bit more maybe, you'll see the two dots after Kaharei Ha'esh. Tani Rabbi Chia. Now Rabbi Chia takes the four avos in our Mishnah and he adds another 9. So 9 plus 4 is how much? 13. So that's called Tani Debei, Tani Rav Oshia, Shloshes Rei Avos Nezikin. There are 13 categories Nezikin. In other words, he takes the Mishnah, standing on the shoulders of the Mishnah that has four avos Nezikin, and he adds another 9. Now what you have to notice here, for our purposes today, again we're not learning Bava Kama today, we're learning Sanhedrin, but for our purposes, please notice the case of Shomer Chino, which is the first on the list of the 9 that Rav Oshia adds to the four of us Nezikin. Now, the number 13, which is again 4 plus 9, is not the highest number on the bidding here. Rabbi Chia is going to jack it up even further. He's going to come up with the number 24. So if you count up from the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Beis, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Beis. Tani Rabbi Chia. So until now we had the Mishnah, we had Tani Rabbi Oshia. Now we have Tani Rabbi Chia. Esrim V'arba Ovis Lezikin. So he jacks it up to 24. In other words, he's going to accept the 13 of Rav Oshio, which means the 4 of the Mishnah plus the additional 9, that gives you 13, and he's going to add another 11. And once again, Rav Oshio, we're not going through all these 11, but what we want to focus on is the word ganav. You see that word ganav? It's the first word in the line. So the Gemara is going to ask, why did Rav Oshio omit ganav? So the Gemara answers, and this again from the bottom of the page, you're counting up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. It says, Rav Oshia my time alotoni hani. And the Gemara is going to answer that, listening, why doesn't it say Ganavu Gazlan? Right, again, in Rav Chia's list, he's got Ganavu Gazlan, which is 2 out of the 11 that jacks up the number 13 to 24. Haktanile, it's already included. Rav Oshia feels that there's no need to add Ganav and Gazlan, they're already included. Why? Because in the list of Rav Oshia, he already has Shomer Chinam Vashoel. So what happens now, again, if you're writing notes, we now have an equation, according to Rav Oshia, between Ganav and Gazlan and Shomer. Now, again, what's the case of a Shomer? There are many different cases of Shomer, but the fundamental bottom line of a Shomer is that the object that was deposited in his Rishus for purposes of Shmira, that he should be careful, was never returned to its owner. Once again, it's a concept similar to Ganav. Ganav means you didn't return something that rightfully belongs to someone, you caused them a hefsed. Shomer likewise calls him a hefsed. So again, according to Rav Oshia, the Gemara presents the following thesis. Once Shomer is included in the Avos Nezikin, and according to Rav Oshia, that's one of the 9 that we add to the Mishnah, that has 4, there's no need for Rav Oshia to add Ganav Gazlan because they're already included on the Shomer. What's the underlying similarity between Shomer and Ganav Gazlan? Shomer causes a loss to someone, and a Gazlan causes a loss to someone. Again, you might ask, well, in our Mishnah we have Arba Avos Nezikin, all of which cause a loss, but we want to separate the kinds of a loss. In a Shomer, it's a human being who was given something and he ends up losing it, or at least causing a loss to the mafkid, to the person who owns it. In our Mishnah, we're talking about what's called Maman Amasik, which means I own something and I didn't watch it carefully and it ended up getting destroyed. So the Gemara now asks the following question. Rav Chia Nami, Hatani Le Shomer Chinam. After all, Rav Chia, when he jacked the number up to 24, he was standing on the shoulders of Rav Oshia. He was adding another 11 to Rav Oshia's 13. Well, if that be the case, he already has Shomer Chinam. Why did Rav Chia have to add the cases of Ganav Gazlan? So the Gemara answers, and this is 2 lines before the end of the Amud, Mamona di Asa Liyadei Vehetera, and Katani Mamona di Asa Liyadei Beisura. There are 2 different categories in this calculation, in this number system. One is Mama that came into the Rishus Beheter, and the other is Mama that came into your Rishus Beisur. So which, let's just match it up. Which is the case of Mama Sha'asa Liyadu Beheterah? Shomer. And which is the case of Mama Da'asa Liyadu Beisura? Aganav. So whereas Rav Oshia is willing to join these 2 categories together under a more abstract general rubric, meaning causing someone a hefsed, either in the case of a shomer who didn't return the object that was deposited in his rishus, or the case of a gazlan who took something out of the rishus of someone else, in both cases causing a hefsed, Rabbi Chia wants to divide into two categories. One category is going to be Shomer. That's called Asa, Mamon di Asa liyadeh beheteira, as opposed to the cases of Gana Megazon, which is Mamon di Asa liyadeh beisura. Now, I gave you a couple of pages here. I don't know if everyone has a copy. But what I want you to see is a Rashba. Now, in order to appreciate this Rashba, let's take a look on page Gimel. Now, the last two words on page Beis are Bechidushe Rashba. And again, if you like to highlight or underline, that's what you should underline. Bechidushe Rashba. But we're going to start with the Rashba, which appears here on page Gimel. The Rashba raises the following objection to Rabbeinu Tam. Again, let's go over Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that Maveh is wedged in the Mishnah between Bar and Esh, because Maveh, Shem Adam Ksiv B'Parsha, is a reference to Ganav. And Ganav is written in the Parsha. Well, if that be the case, says the Rashba, I don't understand the minyan of Rabbi Chiya. You recall that Rabbi Chiya, to jack up the number from 13 to 24, added Ganav and Gazlan. Well, wait a second. Rabbi Chiya is based on Rav Hoshea. Rav Hoshea is based on 4 plus 9, right, to get the number 13. So we're all based on the Mishnah itself. No one's questioning the numbers of the Mishnah. Well, Mava in the Mishnah, says Rabbeinu Tam, is a reference to a Ganav. How then can Rav Chiya add Ganav to his list? Ganav equals Ganav. Let's read it inside. HaChidush HaRashba Heir al Rabbeinu Tam Di'im Mava Dektoni. If Mava in a Mishnah, Hainu Ganav. And again, Rabbeinu Tam does this in order to defend his grandfather, to make sure that Keseder HaParsha Ksiv BaMishnah, and Keseder HaParsha means the Parsha wedges Ganav in between Bar and Esh. Im kein chasule minyan ala Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya doesn't have a minyan of 24. And why is that? Well, Chadad Rav Chiya Toni Echad Asar, right? Rav Chiya certainly adds 11 to the 13 of Rav Yoshia, ubechlolin, included in those additional 11 is Ganav Gazlan. Umana nami tleisa de Rav Yoshia, vahavile esrim v'arba. So, in addition to counting the Mishnah, he also counts the additional 9 of Rav Yoshia, adding, calculating 13, and then to those 13. He adds another 11, amongst them are Ganav and Gazlan. But wait a second, Mava de Masnis and Hainu Ganav. So how can Rav Chiya, who's counted already Ganav in the first four of us Nezikin, namely in Mava, how could he now add Ganav on top of the list? Everybody have the kasha? This is a gevaldik kasha, the Rashban Chidushim on Rabbeinu Tam.
Is this because we're saying it's a duplication?
I guess you call it A equals A. It's a tautology. I wouldn't call it a duplication. It's a repetition. Sometimes the word duplication means, you know, conceptually they're similar. Here it's literally Ganav, right? The Torah says, again, I'm sorry I didn't bring a Chumash. You know, I always beg someone to chain down a Chumash with Rashi to this classroom. But in the absence of a chain, I have to remember every day to bring in a chumash, but I don't always remember to bring in a chumash, and that's my problem. So I don't mean that you have to suffer because of my weakened, you know, lapse in memory. Anyway, if you open up the chumash, the Parshas Mishpatim, you'll see the following: Shor, Bar, Ganav, and Esh. You'll see it inside. It's always good to Osiel's Machkimos to see it inside. Oh, now. What is Ganav? Ganav is a Ganav, right? Rav Chiya, when he adds the numbers to jack up the numbers of admission of Avos Nezikin, he includes Ganav. Now, it's only Rabbeinu Tam who's responsible for telling us that the word Mava is a Ganav. Okay, if you give me a Chumash, again, I need a blue Chumash, but maybe I'll get used to this art scroll stuff. It's hard for me. You know, you get used to it. Oh, Excellent. Steve has it already down to a science of 428. Yeah, so let's start on 424 for a minute. 426. Yeah, 424? Okay, 424, actually the bottom of 422 starts with Shor. Do you see that? So write down number one is Shor, the bottom of 422. Oh, I'm sorry. Here, take this one. Go ahead. Okay, then the bottom of 422. Okay, now turn the page. So you're on page 424. And the next parasha is going to be Ki Yiftach Ish Bor. Yeah? The next parasha is is the bottom line on page 424, Pasuk Lamed Vav, Ki Yignov Ish. You see that? Ki Yignov Ish. Then you turn the page to 426. And you have Pasuk Dalid, and you have Ki Yaveh Ish Sada, which is fire, otherwise known as Maveh. So you see, Rabbosai, this is what Rabbeinu Tam says in order to defend the position of his grandfather, who insists that Keseder HaParsha Kosva Mishnah. The Mishnah is following the Seder HaParsha. So when it says Maveh, it's referring to Ganav. So cross out the word Maveh, according to Rabbeinu Tam, and substitute the word Ganav. So Ganav is the third of the four office nezikin listed in the Mishnah. How then can Rav Oshia, when he jacks up the number to 24, add Ganav? Ganav equals Ganav. We'll call it a duplicate if you like.
It's already in there.
It's already in there. So this Rav Osai is going to lead us to our discussion for today, that there are two categories of Ganav. That the word Ganav really hides two different categories of Ganav. Now, in order to explain this, we have to divide up Gneva, break up Gneva into two parts. And this is almost like an introduction, not only to Sanhedrin, but also to Masechta Bava Kama, to major chunks of Bava Kama. On the one hand, a Ganav is someone who takes an object and locks it up in a way that the bailin, the nignav, can no longer have access to. That's called, in conceptual terms, a maisa gneva. But there's another dimension to gneva, and that's called a kinyan gzela, kinyan gneva, where the thief actually acquires ownership of it. Now, we can talk about the nafkamina between Maisa Gzela and Kinyan Gzela till we're blue in the face. We're going to just focus today on one dimension of this difference between Maisa Gneva and Kinyan Gneva. In the case of a Maisa Gneva, the Torah is going to say that you have to pay, the Ganav has to pay, because of the loss of the object. The loss of the object. When I say the loss of the object, what I mean is that the Nignav no longer has his object. So far, so good. Now, if I were to ask you, is that similar to a mazik, what would you say? It's almost identical to a mazik. Just that in the case of a mazik, he destroys the object. In the case of a ganav, he makes it impossible for the nignav to get access to the object. But conceptually, they're identical. In both senses, there's a hefsed of the moment. Then there's a different category of ganav. And that category of ganav is a ganav who has implemented a kinyan gzela. Kinyan gzela means he drags the object out of the domain, out of the reshus of the nignav, and he schleps it into his domain. In doing so, he achieves a kinyan gzela. Now again, as I said before, there are many, many nafkaminas to a kinyan gzela, but we're going to focus on one of them. Okay? Here's the case. Let's say, at the time of the Gneva, the object was worth 10. But at the time of the Kinyan Gneva, it was worth 20. Or let's say the opposite. Let's say at the time of the Kinyan Gneva, it was worth 20. and at the time in the Maisik Zeila was worth much more. Again, we're going to try to show different scenarios. What happens is the following. There's a halacha that a gazlan pays kishas hagzela. So if you have time T1 and time T2, if it goes up in price, the ganav gains. Why? Because he's only going to pay the value of time T1 at the time of the gazela. Now, why is that so? And the answer is because he has a kinyan gneva. A kinyan gzela. He acquires ownership of the object. So if the object either goes up in value or down in value, that's the ganav's business. That has nothing to do with the nignav. The nignav is going to demand payment that's set. You know, it's how do you say, graved? It's engraved in stone at the moment of the gneva, meaning at the moment when the ganav achieved his kinyan. Because from that moment on, the object per se, which is called a be'en, be'ez ayin yud nun, the object per se, now belongs to the ganav. And any change in the value, fluctuation in the value, that goes to the ganav. That has nothing to do with the nignav. So as far as the nignav is concerned, the obligation of payment is set in stone. It's frozen at the time of the gneva, at the time of the gzela. So here what I'd like you to do is open up to page 2 in this little photocopy that I gave you. Do you see a paragraph that starts with Hine b'shulchan aruch? It's on the right column. Because there are actually 4 paragraphs on page 2 on Bays that start with the word Hine. So if I just told you it started with the word Hine, you would not be clear about that. So the first of the 4, they deal with a certain chiddush of Rabbi Kiva Eger. What's the case? Tavo hapikadon. We're going back to a shomer. And if you recall, we equated a shomer with what? With a ganav. What was the similarity between a shomer and a ganav? That was why Rav Oshia felt he didn't have to add ganav to the list, because he already had shomer to the list. In both cases, he doesn't return the object, and therefore, he's causing a loss. Tavo hapikadon v'kafar bo. The shomer denies that he ever got this horse, you know, as a pikadon. Miyad naso of gazlan. From the very moment that he denies that he received this, let's imagine in the following more profound case. He's in Bezdin, and he tells the plaintiff, meaning the mafkid, to go fly a kite. I never got a horse from you. I don't know what you're talking about. So the Gemara establishes in Masecht Bava Kamma, Blineta will see this inside in just a second, that a kofer v'pikadon is a ganav. What does that mean? The very moment that he denies in Bezdin that he took this object, he is a gazlan. But Rabosai, how would you describe this gazlan? Do you remember the Gemara that we just saw on Daf Dalet Amud Beis? The Gemara had 2 categories of a ganav gazlan. There was one that was called Asi Biyado Behetera, and then there was another called Asi Biyado Beisura. How would you define this case? Tavo b'pikadon v'kafar bo. What kind of a gazlan is he? Excellent. Asi liyada b'hetera. Why? Because how did this horse get into his pen? He was given that horse for the purpose of shmira. So that's called asi liyada b'hetera. But nevertheless, he's considered a gazlan. And what does it mean he's considered a gazlan? Let's say 2 witnesses testify that he did receive the horse. The horse is now gone, but it died nevach of a heart attack, you know, a lightning struck. That's called onsim. And he has to pay for that. Why? because we're jacking up his chiyuv from that of a shomer to that of a gazlan. Do you follow this transition? When he received the object, he was, let's say, a shomer chinam. A shomer chinam was not chayv owns him. It was not his negligence. The animal died of old age. But now we jack him up to a gazlan. What makes him into a gazlan? The fact that he is absconding with the object. He's claiming it for himself. By the way, has he necessarily done a kinyan on the object? It could be that the horse is exactly in the place where it was given to him. He hasn't achieved a kinyan gzela. That's what Rabbi Kivega is going to point out in just a second. I'm already sort of jumping ahead of myself. But in any event, what happens now? He's a gazlan.
So, Rabbi, can I
yeah, say, please.
How do we know that from reading this that it's beheter? Is that because he denies?
No, only because he's a shomer. Shomer by definition.
How do we know he's a shomer from reading this?
Well, it says tovo hapikad. Pikad means shmira.
Oh, okay. So
the Shulchan Aruch is talking about a case of hilka shmira.
As opposed to
a pickpocket who puts his hand in someone else's pocket and takes his wallet out. You know, that would be also the other
beast. What word would we use if it wasn't pikadon means an item, right?
A deposit.
Or Tovah Agneva, maybe you would say, you know, he was Tovah as a Ganu.
Okay, right.
But the word Pikot
implies an object.
Yeah. It's a deposit. Something that I safe deposit in your hand. Yeah, but little did I know that you would deny the whole story. You know, I thought you were a trustworthy fellow. So that's called Kfiras Pikadon. Now this phrase Kfiras Pikadon appears here at the beginning of Masecht Sanhedrin in Rashi. Rashi says Gzelos Kofer B'Pikadon. Apparently Rashi is exercising this equation here that a shomer who's kofer b'pikadon and he denies that he ever received this horse, in my example, he becomes a gazlan. So when our Mishnah says that you try a person for gzela in front of a bezin of three, Rashi identifies gazlan as a shomer who denies that he received the object. Now, where does the Gemara equate a shomer who denies that he received the object with a gazlan? So if you have the Gemara above a Kama, open up for a moment just the page Kuf Hey Amud Beis, just that you see the words inside. See, counting approximately 12 to 15 lines up from the bottom, Omer Av Sheshes, the first word in the line is dummy. You have it? Amar Rav Sheshes, HaKofer B'Pikadon, Nase Olav Gazlan, V'Chayav Ba'onsin. So here's the difference between a shomer and a gazlan. When he receives the Pikadon, he's only a shomer. A shomer is only Chayav for Pshia, he's not Chayav for Onsin. But when he denies that he received it, he changes his status to that of a gazlan. And therefore he's going to be chayav for onsim. As long as he's a shomer, he's not chayav for onsim. But once he becomes a gazlan, he's chayav for onsim. So far, so good. Now I'll ask you the following question. What happens if the object that he received as a pikadon, and he plays the role of a shomer, was worth 10?
Worth 10 at the time that he received
that he received it. Correct? Then he
that's a Maisa Kinyan?
No. There's no Maisa Kinyan because
it's some kind of Kinyan.
No. And this is called, where I have to introduce another principle since Joseph asked this question. Yad Shomer Ki Yad Balabais. What that means is that if I deposit something in your possession and you're watching and guarding it for me, wherever it is, it's in my Rishus. Yeah, it's a very conceptual halacha, but that's the rule. So that at this point, you're nothing but a shomer. Now, it was worth 10. Fine. Now I sue you in court because you're refusing to return the object. So you deny that you ever got it. Okay? It's still worth 10 at this point. So at what point did you become a gazlan? In other words, what I mean to say is, when you were kofer b'pikadon, what was it worth? 10. So you became a gazlan on something that's worth 10. Now it goes up in value. Now it's worth 12. It goes up in value, and let's say the shomer leaves the door open, and as a result, this we'll call it a. When I say 10, I don't mean 10 lirot, you know, 10 could mean $10,000, right? Just 10, right? So now the horse, which is worth a lot of money, right? The horse goes out through the open door. What's that called in Hilchos Shmira? Shia. So imagine what happened. At the point that he became a gazlan, when he was kofer b'pikadon, the horse was only worth 10. At the point of Shia as a shomer, the animal is worth 12. What will he pay? 10 or 12?
10.
Oh. 12. So I would have said that he pays 10. Why? Because he became a gazlan at the moment of kofer b'pikadon, right? That's what Rav Sheshet says, a kofer b'pikadon, nasal of gazlan. Well, a gazlan pays kishas akzela. It was worth 10 at the time that he was kofer b'pikadon, i.e. when he became a gazlan. On the other hand, as far as if let's say I want to sue him now as a shomer for pshia, well, at the point at which he left the door open and the animal just roamed around and got lost, it was already worth 12. So what do we say here? Do we say, well, let's freeze it at the moment he became a gazlan and therefore he pays 10? Or shall we say that this man wears two hats? What do I mean he wears two hats? He's at the same time a gazlan and a shomer. And then Archimedes is going to follow. If we say that he became a gazlan and he's no longer a shomer, if we're going to say that the status of a shomer as a gazlan is antithetical to his original status as a shomer, meaning this, the new status at the moment that he was kofir b'pikadon as a gazlan, now undermines his original status as a shomer, then he only pays kishas akzela and he's no longer a shomer. So the chiyuve akzela would overshadow and replace the chiyuve shomer. The chiyuve shomer are now overshadowed. They are completely lost. Hence, he will only pay 10. Or do I say no? That he has a chiyuv as a gazlan, l'chumrah, meaning if the object gets lost, the onsim, right? If lightning strikes. But at the same time, he wasn't mafkia. He didn't remove from himself his status as a shomer. And therefore, if he was poshea, and the animal went out because he didn't lock the pen, then he has to pay for that pshia. And at the time of the pshia, the animal was worth 12.
Isn't it almost like His negligence is his acquisition date, if you like. So he acquires that animal by being negligent at the value of 12, or is that not that?
I don't know that that's so. I don't know that that's so. You may know sugyas that I don't know. I mean, again, I'm not a bucky in shas. But as far as I know, the case of a shomer, when he was poshea, means that he has to pay for causing a loss to the mafkin, to the owner. And if at the time that the horse was, you know, was let loose, so to speak, which is a pshia, he has to replace that horse, well, the horse is worth 12 at the time of the pshia. Unless you say that his status as a shomer is completely null and voided because he became a gazlan when he was kofer b'pikadon. This is the question that of Rabbi Kivega. You begin to see how complicated Dini Mamonos is. And Rabbi Kivega says the following. This is on the third line. Mikolakom lo paka mimenu chiyuv shomrim. Do you see those words? If you want to underline them on the third line. Mikolakom lo paka mimenu chiyuv shomrim. Even though at the time that he was kofer pikon, he became what? A gazlan. But nevertheless, he hasn't removed the other hat. And if need be, we're going to pull out another hat from the, and he's going to be chayav as a shomer. Afkaminatim achrei shekofar, after he denied the bezdin, let's say that he had the animal, that he was ever given the animal, nisyaker, it went up in value, pashabo sheneva, then it was lost. Demitzad gazlan lo mishalim rak kishas hagzela, which is only 10. The Hainu, where's the Gzela here? Bishas Kfira, when he denied that he had the horse. And it was worth less. But Mitam Shomer, Chayav Kishas HaPshia, because that's when he caused the loss. When he opened up the door and the animal got lost. Says Rabbi Kivega, he's going to pay the higher price, namely the price as a Shomer for his Pshia, namely when it goes up to 12. And why is that so? Because Rabbi Akiva is saying, okay, we call him a gazlan, and then from that moment on, he's chayav owns him, but he's still chayav as a shomer, and he cannot exempt himself neutralize his status as a shomer. He has an obligation to watch the object. Just because he became a gazlan doesn't mean that he's no longer a shomer. That's the chiddush of Rabbi Akiva. Now, Rabbi Kivega asks the same question in a different scenario. And here's the second scenario of Rabbi Kivega. What happens if instead of being kofer b'pikadon, the shomer was sholeach yad b'pikadon? He starts riding the horse. Okay, he rides the horse. We have our halacha that a sholeach yad b'pikadon is called a gazlan. Now, he brings the horse back home, right, back to the corral. And guess what? He opens the corral and the animal gets lost. The difference is that when he rode the animal, it was only worth 10. When the animal got loose, as a result of his pshia, it was worth 12. How much is he going to pay?
10. 12.
If Rabbi Kivega is consistent, he should have said 12. Why? Because his status as a gazlan does not exempt him, does not neutralize his status as a shomer. So at the time of his pshia, when he opened the corral, it was worth 12. Let him pay 12 for the pshia. Says Rabbi Kivega, no, he's a gazlan and he's not a shomer. Why? Because of sholeach yad b'pikadon. Says Rabbi Kivega, there's a fundamental difference between two ways in which a shomer becomes a gazlan. In case number one, he became a gazlan by virtue of the fact that he was kofir b'pikadon. In case number two, he became a gazlan by virtue of the fact that he was sholeach yad b'pikadon. Says Rabbi Kivega, there's a fundamental difference. These are two different categories of Gneva. In the first category of Gneva, he did an action, which is a Maisa Gneva, because the Torah considers denying that you have the object, meaning you're in a sense you're keeping it, you're locking it up in your corral in the case of a horse. That's considered like a Maisa Gneva. But what's missing? Kinyan. There's no Kinyan Gzela. Kinyan Gzela means when I take the object. I didn't take the object. Again, I got it locked up somewhere and I'm denying that it's yours. I never got it from you. It's mine from Sheshis Mei Breshis. But I didn't do an act of a Kinyan. Now we can upgrade in the case of Sholeach Yad Pikadon, his status as a gazlan, to a gazlan with a Kinyan. And a gazlan with a kinyan is different than a gazlan without a kinyan. What does, according to Rabbi Kivega, what does the kinyan of the gazlan accomplish in this particular context?
Takes off the shomer.
Exactly. It's mafkia hishem shomer. Shomer means I'm watching your object. But if it's my object, then how can I acquire this object when you didn't give it to me? The answer is through kinyan gzeila, and that's called sholeach yad pikadon. Then I'm no longer shomer. Says Rabbi Kivega, paradoxically, it's almost counterintuitive. As a result of upgrading his status as a gazlan times two, he is now the most despicable gazlan. He's a thief with a kinyan gzeila. He has now gained something. Again, he could lose something also, but he gained something. He now sheds from his back his status as a shomer. And the nachamina is going to be that if later on the animal goes up in value and he was poshea, he doesn't pay the higher value. Because as far as the object is concerned, the object now belongs to the gazlan insofar as sholeach yad pikadon acquires ownership of the object through kinyanei gzeila. Now, whatever happens to the object afterwards could either be the gazlan's gain or the gazlan's loss, depending on whether it goes up in value or down in value. Rabbi Kivega's cases where it went up in value, well, the gazlan lucked out. He actually, you know, this is what we call crime pays. He actually gained something through his kinyan gzela. Mashen came in the first case where the Torah considers it halachically a maisa gneva, a maisa gzela, when he's kofer b'pikadon, because he denies that he got it. That doesn't jack up the gzela to the second level, the higher level of kinyan gzela. Hence, the original chiyuv as a shomer is still intact. So Rabosai Beli Neder, tomorrow's Wednesday, so if you, again, I'm not telling you you have to be there, but if you're around at 10:30 tomorrow, we're going to be able to wrap this up. Because this insight into two categories of Gneva is going to possibly answer up the Rashba's Kasha, which we saw on page Gimel. Again, you know, his objection to Rabbeinu Tam, let's just go over very quickly Rabbeinu, the Rashba's objection to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says that Mave in our Mishnah is referring to Ganav, and yet Rabbi Chia adds Ganav to his list that jacks it up from 4 Avos Nezikin to 24 Avos Nezikin, and it's a duplication or a repetition. And we're going to say, no, it's 2 categories of Ganav, that's what we want to develop tomorrow. And what I want to try to finish up tomorrow is that this will shed a light on Rashi. Rashi in the Mishnah, when he gets to Gzelos, he quotes in Shomer 2 conditions. Number 1, he was kofer v'pikadon. Number 2, he's sholeach yad. Why does Rashi need those 2 conditions? So B'li Neder will try to answer up that kasha tomorrow. Okay, then, if you have time, because I'm giving you these pages as a gift, go over especially this paragraph of Hine on the right side of page Beis and see the Reb Kveiga over and over again. It's a brilliant Reb Kveiga. It really is so fundamental. It opens up new vistas in Masechta Bava Kamma, and then it's going to have an influence on our Rashi at the beginning of Masechta Sanhedrin. Any questions before we go? All right, we'll stop here. Shka.
When a God makes a kinyan, that's a kinyan legamre. It's just that it has a
vlados. That if the animal gives birth, he owns the vlados. Uh-huh.
It's just that it
the
has
shearings,
a,
you know.
It just says that it has a piyu of tashlumen on top of it.
That's interesting.
But it's still a
kinyan. Now the question is tashlumen. What is that tashlumen? This is a chakir of Reb Chaim. Is it tashlumen to replace the object, or is it tashlumen toras mazik simply because he caused the hefse
as a kenas?
So the owner can perhaps be compensated for the damage that he suffered in perpetuity, perhaps.
I mean, well, it depends. If the shomer still maintains the status of the shomer because he didn't achieve a kinyan, then in perpetuity, the owner of the object can claim all those losses and get compensated. But if, on the other hand, the shame shomer is completely gone, and why is that? Because a shomer means I'm watching your object. Here I'm a gazlan, and I made a kinyan on it, and that's going to be Reb Kveiga's understanding of shaleach yad. Then it's my object. If it goes up in value, that's my gain. If it goes down in value, that's my loss. The fact that at the time of the Pshia it was worth 12 instead of 10, that's irrelevant, says Rabbi Kveiga, because he's no longer a shomer. Once he makes a kinyan on it through Shlichus Yad V'Pikadon, Pachalei Shem Shomer, and now he's a gazlan. A gazlan pays Kishas like Zeilun.
I'm going to leave this one.
Yeah, please.
I think it's probably above my pay scale to translate this perfectly, so I'm going to leave it here as well.
Okay. I'm trying to explain it gradually. I mean, if you're following.
I'm following.
Again, if you write notes, you'll be in better shape.
I used to give evidence in court as a witness on these damages, as an expert witness. So the secular, you know, whole legal system is so different, but it's interesting.
You know, a lot of Masechta Sanhedrin is going to be about what we call expert witnesses.
Okay,
you know, it comes up over and over again in Masechta Sanhedrin.
Many times in
Rasha and Karnot.
The Rashba. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to go through it.